responsibility as an occupation force in the West Bank or in the Gaza Strip by providing the all necessary means of life, whether it was food or medicine or any means of life that the Gazans will need so dearly in the coming period.
With that, I'd like to go ahead and thank my guest today, political researcher and writer, Mr. Ali Miraz, for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Till next time, salam.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the United States, just hours after a New York judge expanded a gag order to stop Donald Trump from making nasty attacks against his daughter, the former president posted a clip on Truth Social in which Fox News commentator Brian Kilmeade slammed the judge's daughter. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American newspaper The Daily Beast has covered this story and tells us more. The former President Donald Trump is getting more creative with getting around an expanded gag order against him, just hours after a New York judge expanded a gag order to stop Donald Trump from making nasty attacks against his daughter. The former president posted a clip on Truth Social platform on Tuesday, 2nd of April, in which the Fox News commentator Brian Kilmeade slammed the judge's daughter. Lauren Merchan, who runs a political consulting firm that has worked with Democrats, has become the focal point of Donald Trump's attacks against her dad, Judge Juan Merchan, as part of a long-shot attempt to have him ousted as the judge presiding over his hush money criminal case in New York. Tuesday, 2nd of April's clip features attorney Jonathan Turley speaking with Brian Kilmeade and other presenters on Fox and Friends. The two criticized Judge Merchan's ruling on Monday night that expanded Donald Trump's gag order, which have previously barred him only from attacking court staff, prosecutors and witnesses. Now Donald Trump is also forbidden from publicly attacking the families of Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg and the judge himself, Juan Merchan. Brian Kilmeade took exception to that gag order expansion, calling it outrageous, despite Trump having spent more than a week going on unhinged rants and including disproven rumors about Lauren Merchan, who is not involved in the trial. Also, the fact is, the judge's daughter is an activist who works for Kamala Harris, and there was some dispute on whether she did have a picture up on a website with Donald Trump behind bars, Brian Kilmeade said. That to me is something that if I'm Donald Trump, I'm concerned about that. The judge has a daughter who feels this way. Brian Kilmeade's reference to the judge's daughter, Lauren Merchan, posting a photo of Donald Trump behind bars was said to be untrue by her representatives last week. Instead, they said the post in question, that's become a conspiracy in right-wing circles, came from an ex-account that she had not used in many years and no longer had access to. Turley agreed that the gag order has become too expensive, adding that he's against gag orders in nearly all cases. However, he said he thinks that Donald Trump needs to cool it with the personal attacks on the judge's daughter. I would prefer that Trump leave these attacks or issues raised with the judge's family to his counsel, he said. I think that's always the better approach. The national broadcaster ABC News has also covered this story and tells us more. The judge in Donald Trump's criminal hush money case has expanded his limited gag order on the former president to cover the family members of the judge and the district attorney following a request by prosecutors. The limited gag order now covers the family members of District Attorney Alvin Bragg and the judge himself, Juan Merchan, after Donald Trump targeted Merchan's daughter repeatedly on social media over her work with a group involved in Democratic politics. Last week, Judge Juan Merchan issued a limited gag order prohibiting Trump from making comments about potential witnesses in the case, as well as jurors, lawyers, court staff and their families. The gag order permitted Trump to continue making public comments about both Judge Juan Merchan and the district attorney Alvin Bragg. On Monday, 1st of April, prosecutors asked Judge Juan Merchan to clarify whether the limited gag order he issued last week applies to the judge's family and to relatives of the district attorney Alvin Bragg. In his ruling late on Monday, 1st of April, Judge Juan Merchan wrote, "The defendant has a constitutional right to speak to the American voters freely and to defend himself publicly." However, the judge pointed to the singular power that Trump's words have on countless others and the grave concern prosecutors said witnesses have expressed about participating in the trial, which is set to begin on 15th of April. The threats to the integrity of the judicial proceedings are no longer limited to the swaying of minds, but on the willingness of individuals, both private and public, to perform their lawful duty before this court, Judge Juan Merchan said. It is no longer just a mere possibility or a reasonable likelihood that there exists a threat to the integrity of the judicial proceedings. That threat is very real. In a statement issued in response to the ruling, Trump's campaign spokesperson Stephen Chung said, "Judge Juan Merchan's unconstitutional gag order prevents President Trump, the leading candidate for President of the United States, from engaging in core political speech, which is entitled to the highest level of protection under the First Amendment." Judge Merchan's ruling followed a letter to the court on Friday in which the district attorney's office said Trump's attacks on the judge's daughter are making other witnesses gravely concerned about their safety. "Defendant's dangerous, violent, and reprehensible rhetoric fundamentally threatens the integrity of these legal proceedings and is intended to intimidate witnesses and trial participants alike, including this court," the prosecutors wrote in the new court filing.
The sovereignty and territorial integrity of member states must be respected in accordance with international law. So says the UN's Assistant Secretary General, Khaled Kiari, speaking at a special Security Council meeting when condemning the Israeli attack on an Iranian embassy building in Damascus. This is Gaza Under Attack with me, Amina Taylor, broadcasting from the British capital. Now, let's get caught up with some fresh developments relating to the ongoing genocide on Gaza. Tel Aviv stands accused of stoking an all-out regional war, a move that's been condemned at the highest quarters after its attack on a Tehran-linked consular premises in the Syrian capital. The Islamic Republic of Iran says perpetrators and supporters of the terrorist act will be punished. The international outcry and calls for an urgent investigation continue after an Israeli strike killed 7 aid workers delivering food in Gaza, 1 Palestinian and 6 foreign nationals from Australia, Poland, and 3 from the United Kingdom and elsewhere died after their marked convoy was attacked by Israeli drones. London summoned Israel's ambassador and demanded an immediate investigation into the deadly attack, with British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak calling the killings appalling. The man-made famine is now taking a firm hold inside Gaza. Fewer agencies are on the ground, with a growing number of charities pausing their work after the latest attack by Tel Aviv, citing safety concerns. The death toll since October last year now tops 33,000 souls, with tens of thousands still unaccounted for, under the rubble or injured. With us for this edition of the program, in studio with me, Alex Ackerman, the political analyst, and Dr. Zakaria Abbas, doctor and international health campaigner, who joins us via Skype from Bangalore in India. Gentlemen, so good of you to be here with us, even under these circumstances. I start with you, Dr. Abbas. Or reflections on the facts: a ceasefire or a pause was called for by the UN Security Council, but we've seen an escalation by Israel, if nothing else. Why is Tel Aviv not being made to comply at this juncture?
Well, 5 months down the lane, and we continue to witness an unbearable human tragedy. From the very own words of the UN chief, it is beyond catastrophic. What we heard last few weeks is US trying to come towards a ceasefire solution, but that was a complete lie. He stressed on the importance of Ramadan, where, you know, so many billions of Muslims, you know, they fast and it is a month of peace, but it's 3 weeks down the lane and we have seen hundreds of people being killed on a daily basis. And the massacre at Al-Shifa Hospital, and this is the same hospital which was attacked first and Israel denied its involvement. And we've heard reports of sexual harassment and rape, which again, Israel started this entire campaign based on lies, right? And we have so many people, 1.2 million people stuck in Rafah, and today Israel shamelessly still speaks about attacking Rafah. Today we have men, women and children dying with the pain of hunger. We have parents watching their children die helplessly before they're being killed. And such a deplorable attack on the World Central Kitchen, where Bravehearts, the 7 international Bravehearts, were killed in cold blood. And today Israel is exposed to the world, and the hypocritical stance of United Kingdom, Australia and other countries, today they feel the pain because their citizens are being killed. And let me tell you, this was an unprovoked attack where these individuals had just delivered hundreds of tons of aid and they were heading back to their base. And 3 cars were unprovokedly, struck by missile. And, you know, this is just an example. When we talk about hundreds of people dying, this is just an example. Again, let us repeat that there are over 33,000 killed and over 400 alone in West Bank. And when we say killed, we also need to stress on the thousands of people injured, because these critically injured people have no place to be, you know, receive the life-saving treatment because the entire healthcare system has been collapsed.
And as a clinician, yeah, I can only imagine the additional pain that you must feel knowing this. And I turn to you, Alex, because we talked there at the beginning in my introduction about this attack on an Iranian consulate building in Damascus. Why would Israel risk an all-out regional assault? What is the end game here?
I think This is, we're going to probably move into another chapter in this war in Gaza. And the president of China said just a few days ago that the war of Israel in Gaza and the world's inability to stop it is a tragedy for humankind and also a disgrace for our civilization. I mean, the UN is the highest institution in the world. They called for a ceasefire. Until now, the ceasefire is not implemented. What should be the implementation, or what should be the body which should make Israel comply with this injunction? So the attacks on the different countries, like because you have Hezbollah in Lebanon, but they've been trying
to... Well, they didn't attack them in Lebanon. They attacked them in Syria.
Some attacks have been launched into South Lebanon. And now in Syria, they've attacked Iranian consulate, leading to death of, you know, some diplomats. Maybe Israel is trying to wage a wider war against all its enemy, but that will lead to a wider conflict in this world. We've already going through different wars and different conflicts around the globe. And after 6 months of this onslaught and killings in Gaza, the talks between America and the West and Israel should have reached something suitable for the people of Gaza.
And so
unfortunately,
far, Alex,
things are not going this direction, maybe.
Well, to say the least, we'll come back to some of your sentiments there, but just from a British perspective here, as I mentioned, British Foreign Secretary David Cameron has echoed the sentiments of his Australian, American, and Canadian counterparts by demanding an urgent probe into the Israeli strike that killed 7 aid workers, as you heard there, in Gaza before. Volunteers with the World Central Kitchen were struck by Israeli drones when leaving the charity's warehouse in Deir al-Balah on Monday.
Turning to the situation in Israel and Gaza, the dreadful events of the last 2 days are a moment when we should mourn the loss of these brave humanitarian workers, including the 3 British citizens that tragically were killed. We should also send our condolences to their families, and our thoughts should be with them. I welcome what the Israeli Foreign Minister said yesterday to me about a full, urgent and transparent inquiry into how this dreadful event was allowed to happen, and we want to see that happen very, very quickly. I also welcome the fact that he spoke about much more aid getting into Gaza, up to 500 trucks a day. That is essential. We've been promised these things before, and this really needs to happen, including longer opening times at the vital crossing points. But of course, the extra aid won't work unless there is proper deconfliction, unless aid can be taken around Gaza and we avoid the dreadful incidents like we've seen in the last couple of days. That is vital, and Britain will be watching very closely to make sure that that happens.
David Cameron there, the British Foreign Secretary. Dr. Abbas, Israel first deflected blame. Then it said what happened was a grave mistake. But how could that have been when the convoy, as you mentioned earlier, was clearly marked and the coordinates were already shared with the Israeli occupation forces?
The place where these convoy was struck, it was not a conflict zone, as everyone knows about it. See, today Israel is clearly losing the media war. You know, all these decades, they thought if they had control over the media, you know, if they had stooges doing what they say, you know, the people are dumb to believe them. But today, the power of citizen voice has taken over the entire information war. And today, every citizen, me sitting back in India, I know the facts, I know the truth. Because come on, you know, we're educated people. I do not believe any of these investigations, because there are thousands of crimes committed by Israel just in the last 5 months, let alone the last few decades. And when they say that we're going to do a high-level investigation, but what comes out? Nothing but propaganda. When Israel says it was unintentional, why are they not apologizing? And I am so ashamed. I'm so, you know, so ashamed about the United States stand that today John Kirby, the White House National Communication and Security Advisor, says that there is no evidence that Israel has violated international humanitarian law. Well, do they think we are dumb, deaf and blind? This is absolutely deplorable. And very recently, today, America is losing the support of the Muslims. Like just yesterday, the annual iftar was cancelled because none of the Muslims wanted to accept the invitation. This is just the beginning, because Israel is clearly losing their ground in this ongoing genocide. We have to term this as genocide. Where is International Court of Justice? Where is United Nations Security Council? Is Israel so powerful that they can, you know, insult the Security Council, vote on immediate ceasefire? I don't understand. If it was another country like Yemen or Libya, they would have been invaded by
absolutely
now.
Absolutely nothing happens. And I saw Alex Ackerman there shaking his head. Now, we've seen the knock-on effect of what happened to these seven aid workers. And we've had 196 other recognized aid workers, especially and primarily Palestinians, be killed before. But this has touched a chord. It's really raised the public consciousness the way in which it happened, for example. But we're seeing here that it's had a knock-on effect where other charities are saying, listen, we cannot guarantee the safety of our staff. So unfortunately, we have to pause activities at the moment. Wasn't this the aim in the first place, if you were a cynical man, Alex?
I mean, it's really difficult to see what is really happening now in this place. First of all, the convoy, a lot of convoys have been stopped to get into Gaza. And I think many politicians have criticized the fact that the Israeli government basically doesn't allow the convoy to get in as quick as possible to allow food to get to the people and the medicine to get to people injured. Hospitals are completely run out of medicine.
That's if they're standing.
Now, on top of that, what is a bit cynical as well, you see that the Western countries like the US just allow more equipment, more arms to be sold to Israel. We also have three British citizens were killed. And I think today the Lib Dem leader was asking the government to stop selling arms to Israel. So you can see that for the last 6 months, these killings have been going on. And despite the talk between Americans, Foreign Secretary, and Israelis going down there mediating, things are not getting better. It's even getting worse. And America is feeding Israel with more arms and more equipment. As a result, Israel, even despite the UN call for a ceasefire, nothing has been happening.
At all. And had that ceasefire come into operation, Alex, so many lives would have been saved already, even though it's already gone as bad as it is.
Exactly.
We'll be getting back to that discussion after this, because many of us are aware that on the last Friday of Ramadan, the annual Quds Day commemorations take place across the globe, calling for solidarity with the people of Palestine, something that's needed more than ever. We spoke to Raza Barak Ali, pro-Palestinian activist, who reminded us that it was not solely an Iranian event.
The last Friday of Ramadan, I believe. So yeah, I think it's an opportunity for people to show support, you know, on this day, you know, for the what's going on. The people of Palestine, opinion is changing, not just in the Islamic world. I think opinion is changing globally, where people are seeing, you know, what's going on in Palestine and Israel as not being, oh, it's just one side. I think they're recognizing that, you know, what's going on by the IDF it is corrupt. And I think, you know, people who are sort of, you know, middle of the road are, you know, probably seeing things, well, not probably, they are seeing things differently, where in the past they, you know, wouldn't have an opinion either way. But, you know, now they're sort of seeing, you know, so they're probably sort of seeing that, you know, it's not an Iranian thing. It's not, again, my view is it's not an Iranian thing. Perhaps it started by the Iranians, but it's a Palestinian thing. It's a human thing now. There have been protests every Saturday, every Sunday. There's always something going on. So in regards to, you know, our Quds Day, you know, if people are able to, you know, it's not a political movement. It's a human movement. We're showing support for the Palestinian people against, you know, what, you know, what is being done to them by the Zionists and Israelis. So no, I think absolutely, if you're free on Friday and there's something local to you in your city, then go show support.
Demonstrations continued across the UK, with tens of thousands taken to the streets of the British capital over the past weekend to demand the government do more to stop the bloodshed in Gaza. Our cameras were, of course, on hand to get a selection and views on why they've attended the march and what was at stake.
Well, I just think what's happening in Palestine is really, really ridiculous. And the world is just standing and watching them kill so many thousands, so many, I don't know, children, men, women. It's just not right. It's the injustices in this world is just ridiculous. And we need to show this. We need to show the world that this is what it is like.
You can't win a war like this. Like the idea that you know the argument from Israel that you're going to destroy Hamas. Hamas is an organization, but it's an ideology, and there are reasons why it was formed in the first place. And even if you destroy Hamas, you've destroyed millions of lives.
We're still protesting, as you can tell, against the ongoing genocide taking place in Gaza. We're not going to let up until it comes to an end. Listen to the ordinary people who are against this inhumane and cruel war and genocide.
People shouldn't vote for leaders who have failed us. Like, they haven't, you know, fought for justice or for peace. And why should we vote for them if they didn't come to help innocent people around the world who are dying?
It's all about people power. It's all about people power. We need to carry on protesting. We need to carry on marching. I think it will have an impact. It's having an impact.
I think we've seen that with the Galloway making it to the parliament, that Palestine became a stable in UK politics now. And I think the Labour, knowing that they're going into elections soon, they should take note of that and definitely change their position in, from Palestine ceasefire.
Well, let's get some thoughts on those developments within the moments we have left on this edition of Gaza Under Attack. Alex Ackerman and Dr. Zachariah Abbas are still with us. And I wanted to bring you back in here, Dr. Abbas, because, you know, we've seen the demonstrations taking place demanding respective governments do more to put pressure on Tel Aviv. Where you are there also Quds demonstrations expected at this time? I'd like to get that global perspective.
We are a land of India, as you know, Mahatma Gandhi ji, who fought against the British invaders. You know, we are the ones who gain freedom through resistance. So we are the people who can relate to what's happening. But unfortunately, the global politics, the stand of India has been very neutral, and it is also not very satisfactory because of their multilateral connections. But yes, we do have people protesting. We have indoor events, and on social media, as you know, Indian citizens are very much active. And I'm very happy to let you know that India, being a multicultural society, we have Hindus, Christians, Muslims, and different religions. You know, a lot of our friends, not necessarily being Muslims, they've got to know the truth about Palestine. And that is what has happened this time. You know, last few decades, like you said, Iran has been doing Al-Quds Day. I have been participating as a child, but the world thought it was just a political movement. But today, every country is coming out on roads. So Iran has proved its stand that what they started decades back, today, every country is following its footsteps. And the voices are uniting. It's no more about a Muslim issue, it is a global issue. And that is something very, welcoming. And India's stand is neutral. It can be better, but definitely we are with the people of Palestine.
Indeed, Alex, and we see that the individuals who have been mobilizing here are making a difference. What do you make of this no ceasefire, no vote movement in terms of what it could do for politics with an election expected this year?
I mean, what is interesting as well is that this year we will have election in the UK as well as in the US. And with 6 months going down the line and the evidence of what is happening, all the negotiations with no tangible results, people are still destroyed in Gaza. And even now, the aid workers, they prevented the lorries to come into Gaza, but now even the aid worker will venture to try to help sick, you know, people who are deprived of everything. The Israeli army is still targeting them because obviously they knew that this convoy is going for food, to distribute food to the populations who are obviously hungry and deprived and everything. But now, I think with the elections coming up, maybe things will change because from experience, if you look at in America, whenever you have Democrats in power, we tend to have more crises across the globe, wars across the globe. And America being the protector of Israel, for the last 6 months, if they are allies, but what have they done to make sure that things can change on the ground in Gaza? And nothing has really moved on. So hopefully the elections will be maybe what will bring the results and the changes, and the changes which will be coming from the people after the elections will hopefully bring this war to an end and also move on to Palestinians having their own state to ensure
indeed,
that...
Indeed, because it's not just
exactly,
now, right?
It's not just it's now. You're looking future. At a longer-term issue because, I mean, Palestine allowed the territory to be divided into two, to have two states. But how on earth, for the last 60, 70 years, Palestinians don't still have their own state?
Indeed. And I think we can both agree that that's been quite deliberate. Dr. Abbas, I touched on the fact, Arthur, that, you know, as a man of medicine, where your first oath is do no harm, to be watching what's gone down in real time and recognizing that it's either munitions or malnutrition that may well kill you in Gaza. What are your reflections about where we are here? About a minute and a half or so, sir.
You know, our spirits are shattered, our hearts are broken. As a doctor, when we see so many doctors being killed, you know, we have hundreds of humanitarian workers, doctors killed in service. And, you know, when a hospital has a capacity of taking care of 100 patients, they're taking care of 1,000 patients in a day. You know, first of all, my heart goes out to all the martyrs, the doctors who have lost their lives, and immense respect for them and their families. And like I said, from a medical perspective, there are nearly 500,000 people who were at risk of famine by May. And today, if you say that Israel invaded Gaza because of Hamas, that's the biggest lie. If that was the reason, why are they cutting the humanitarian aid? There are thousands of trucks which are stuck at the border, and there are thousands of, you know, there are a lot of organizations who want to reach out to Gaza, but it's just not happening. Today, Israel wants to kill the population exactly like how Adolf Hitler did. You know, it's just ironical where when you feel the pain, you need to feel the pain of others, but it's completely the opposite. And as a doctor, I stand here helpless. And all I can say is I'm praying for them. And we still have hopes. This war against Gaza has united hearts. This is an era where we need to unite hearts to save mankind. And that's the only message I want to give on this platform.
Indeed. Some meaningful words there, of course, our guest. Always knowing that this is such a very difficult conversation for us to have, but yet here we are, and unfortunately, that does it for us for today. Alex Ackerman, Dr. Zachariah Abbas were a very special guest, and our thanks to them and to you for being with us. Until next time, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means to appoint.
Today, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decree.
His decree, though.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Foresight, and I'm your host, Mehdi. Please stay with us. يا إله كل شيء ومليك يا رب كل شيء وصانع يا خالق كل شيء وورث.
Today's tip: why don't we stay cheerful in the holy month of Ramadan, and perhaps this will increase our ubudiyya. Ramadan. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Foresight, and I'm your host, Mehdi. So, dear friends, we are talking about the holy month of Ramadan. We are talking about being cheerful, and we are talking about how it will increase our ubudiyya, our worship, our servitude, and our obedience to Allah. You know, sometimes we kind of have a tendency to think that ubudiyya, worship, and the servitude and the obedience to the Almighty Allah is just something that is, you know, limited to five daily prayers or fasting in the holy month of Ramadan, or, for example, going to Hajj, if all of the requirements are there, and we think that this is ubudiyya. Or, for example, to have a rosary beads, a tasbih in our hands, and to constantly being, you know, moving that tasbih around, this is ubudiyya. Being in a corner of the house, you know, not interacting with anybody, and just kind of being in prostration and in genuflection and ruku and sujood, that this is ubudiyya. Now, of course, through the many different episodes, by the grace and blessings of Allah, we have talked about these things, that no, this is not necessarily what ubudiyya is. Yes, some of these things, like the five daily prayers and the fasting in the holy month of Ramadan and going to Hajj, these are things which are most definitely and certainly and surely manifestations of ubudiyya and the worship and the servitude and the obedience to Allah. Certain things, though, are not even that. They're not manifestations of true, pure Muhammadan Islamic ubudiyya, if you will. So staying in a corner of the house, not interacting with anybody for, you know, months on end, and just have a rosary bead and don't speak to anybody. No, this is not ubudiyya. This is what is known as monasticism, and this idea of going into a monastery and secluding oneself, this is not something that is condoned by Islam. In Islam, you know, we are supposed to interact with people, we are supposed to be in society, and we continue after the break.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.ir.
Have you been feeling sad,
little blue, little down in the dumps?
Well, good, you should be. In the time of ghibat of the 12th Imam, the believers will be tearful.
In fact, Imam Ridha has said,
the most pious of believing men and women are those who are sorrowful for the time of flowing water.
Imam al-Mahdi.
He is the one who will fill the world with goodness. He is the one who will quench that thirst, that sorrow in the hearts of those who believe. If you're feeling depressed and sad and dejected, don't worry.
In a world this bad, you'd have to be sick in the head not to be sad.
You're not abnormal. In fact, you may well be one of the Shia of Imam al-Zaman and the best of people. In the Holy Quran it says, say, have you considered, if your water should go down, who is it then that will bring you flowing water? According to Imam al-Sadiq, the flowing water in this verse means al-Mahdi. You're not sad, you're thirsty for the time of flowing waters. But remember, one is never to confuse that internal true sadness with external sadness. In Aqayid, we learn that the thing which breeds depression for a human is distancing oneself from one's purpose. And what's our purpose? What is your entire purpose in life? The Holy Quran says, and I have not created the jinn and the men except that they should serve me.
That's it?
That's it. But to serve Allah does not only mean to pray to Allah and supplicate to Him. That's a part of it, albeit a very important part. Serving Allah means to be generous with your soul, to be good and kind to the creations of Allah, to have taqwa, God consciousness, to love and to be loved, to struggle in the way of Allah. These are the things that make a human truly happy and tranquil from within, because your purpose in life is being fulfilled. Cheerfulness is very important in the religion of Islam. The Holy Prophet said, cheerfulness is one of the signs of the believer. He also said, meet your brother with a cheerful face. But you say to somebody, assalamu alaikum, brother. And he says, I say, brother, you're being stingy.
Stingy?
Stingy. Because you're not giving your brothers and sisters what they deserve. Imam Ali says, your cheerfulness shows the generosity of your soul. You might be giving that charity from your wallet, and you might even be feeding people from your own dinner table. But if you ain't being cheerful, then you're being stingy with your soul. Allah wants your soul to come alive, but people think that being cheerful means doing things like singing and dancing and haram stuff.
I want a party. That's haram. This is haram. Everything's haram. What's there left to do?
I say, brother, you're being stingy.
Stingy?
Stingy. Loosen up a little. The divine laws and the deen have not come down to restrict you. They've come to set you free. Imagine a plane. In fact, don't imagine a plane. Here's a plane. For it to fly, it needs a runway which is without bumps, with straight borders to guide it so that it can truly soar in the skies. Imagine the pilot sitting inside said,
why is the road so straight? It's restricting me.
Such a person who thinks that cheerfulness and merrymaking is singing, dancing, and drinking is gonna end up one depressed person. You wanna be free? Imam Ali said, cheerfulness is the trait of the free. The cheerfulness of the believer is on his face. His strength is in his religion, and his sorrow lies in his heart. You gotta bury that sorrow deep inside and let people feel the love. So be generous with your soul. Be merry, be giving, have trust in Allah, and remember Him often to guard yourself against depression. And remember, verily in the remembrance of Allah do hearts find rest.
With hope in our eyes, we search through the skies, waiting for our old friend. With loved ones nearby and our spirits high, a blessed time we'll spend. In both love and in fear, to Allah we draw near, hands raised to the sky. Allah, please forgive us and guide us to paradise. Ramadan is here, Allah's mercy is near. Time to give, time to share, time to show.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about being cheerful, and we're talking about the holy month of Ramadan, and we're talking about Ubudiyya. We're really running out of time on the program so incredibly quickly. It's really amazing. So the holy month of Ramadan, in the previous segment, we talked about, you know, Ubudiyya and what it is and what it isn't, and well, we'll kind of continue and hopefully be able to get some sort of a conclusion before time runs out, inshallah. So we're talking about Ubudiyya and you know, how namaz and fasting and praying, these are one manifestation. We talked about how sitting in a corner and monasticism is not a appropriate form of Ubudiyya. And so kind of we wanted to now continue, and you know, the worship and the servitude and the obedience to Allah, this Ubudiyya to Allah Almighty, you know, we have a tendency to think it is certain things and it is not certain things. What we want to talk about now really quickly is cheerfulness, right? One of the things that we would never consider to be a part of Ubudiyya is to be cheerful, right? When in reality this is a part of Ubudiyya. So Ubudiyya, when we're talking about worship and servitude and obedience to Allah, anything that Allah has commanded us to do and anything that Allah has commanded us to not do falls under the circle of Ubudiyya. One. Two, Allah has commanded us to be cheerful, to be happy, to be smiling when it comes to our interactions with people in society. The infallible Imams, alayhi wasalam, have spoken about this. The Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, has spoken about this. This idea of being cheerful, being happy, having a smile on our face. This is incredibly important. So, three, we want to make this connection with the holy month of Ramadan. In this holy month of Ramadan, when we are facing spiritual pressures, we're fasting, it's difficult, it has hardship involved, it puts pressure on us, it creates a certain amount of stress. Of course, with the help of Allah, all of these things can be removed and solved. But in this kind of a situation, being cheerful, having a smile on your face, having a good demeanor, is not only very positive for you as an individual, but it is also very positive for all of the people around you. And finally, this is what Ubudiyya is for the sake of Allah, for the satisfaction of Allah, for the worship and the servitude and the obedience to Allah. We are putting a smile on our face. We are being cheerful, despite that in itself being a little bit difficult, but after a while it becomes natural. This is being done for the sake of Allah, for the pleasure of Allah, and this is Ubudiyya. And of course, this is what we wanted to talk about: cheerfulness, the holy month of Ramadan, and our worship, our servitude, and our obedience to Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. رمضان هل هلاله فاستبشروا بطلوعه وبصومه وصلاته وبذكره وخشوعه فاضت علينا رحمة بالخير من ينبوعه
قد عاد يشرق بالهدى مرحبا برجوعه
رمضان أقبل بالمسرة بعد طول مغيبه رمضان أقبل والأحبة بشروا بقدومه طرب الفؤاد بذكره شوقا إلى نفحاته شهر بلا عد تضاعفت الأجور لأجله.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Libya is a North African country, frequently in the news over its political stalemate. The country has two competing governments, the Tripoli-based High State Council and the House of Representatives in the eastern city of Tobruk. The riposte of these two sides will unite for the good of the country. Libya is also at the center of a migrant crisis. The total number of migrants landed in Italy from Libya last year was approximately 51,700, of which 16,500 came from the eastern region of Libya. This country is also one of the richest countries in Africa in terms of oil reserves. Libya is now trying to ramp up its petroleum output and draw foreign investors back to its vast oil fields. Meanwhile, amid the U.S.-Israeli genocide on Gaza, Libya has voiced support for the measures taken by the International Court of Justice, ICJ, to prevent genocide in the Gaza Strip. Elsewhere, under the deposed dictator Muammar Gaddafi, controversial incidents took place in Libya, including the disappearance of Lebanese scholar Imam Moussa Sadr. Internationally, Libya enjoys cordial ties with many countries, including Iran. Officials say the cooperation between these two Muslim nations are on the right track and can develop in various fields.
An interview with the Libyan ambassador to Iran.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today. This week, we have a special guest to discuss issues relating to Libya. We are honored to have with us here in the studio His Excellency Ali Juma Al-Obeidi, the ambassador of Libya to Iran. Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador, for your time.
Thank you. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
In the name of God, I have to thank Press TV for this opportunity that has been provided for me to explain the Libyan stance regarding regional and international issues.
Let's start off with the Iran-Libya relations. What is the current status of ties between these two friendly countries?
Diplomatic relations between the two sides have developed immensely. They have reached levels that can only be described as outstanding, which is caused by various factors. The most prominent being the desire of the two countries to strengthen these alliances because developing positive relations between countries of the Islamic world makes them stronger and more resilient. During my time in Tehran, I worked on decreasing the sources of tension and developing relations in the interest of my country, Libya, and also the interest of the cordial Iran and the Arab and Islamic region in general.
Mr. Ambassador, you know, nowadays countries are more inclined towards trade. Now, what is the current status of trade ties between Iran and Libya? Are there plans to boost ties in this regard?
Trade relations between the two countries are developing at a slow pace. This is not caused by the Libyan side, since we are open to developing economic relations with Iran, who are friendly. But the Iranian side has some hesitation, or what can be described as not daring to enter quickly and firmly into the Libyan market. We are a country emerging from a war. Therefore, anyone who does not secure their place economically with us will not find a foothold in the future. On that account, the brothers in Iran must be aware of this matter. It is worth noting that Libya is a country rich in diverse economic opportunities. It is possible for Iran, which possesses experience and development in many fields, to summon up Iranian businessmen who will find many job opportunities, starting with medium investments that do not require large capital all the way to strategic investments which Libya desperately needs.
I understand you have written a book, and this book is about relations between Arab countries and Iran. Can you tell us more about this book which you have written?
This book was published in 2023 and talks about the relations between Iran and some Arab countries such as Iraq, Syria, Saudi Arabia and Palestine. I have divided the relations into two parts, the Shah's era and after the Islamic Revolution.
When you presented your credentials to Iran's President Raisi, he said that the problems of Libya and some Islamic countries are caused by the presence of interference of foreigners. What's your opinion on this point?
Certainly, the presence of foreigners in our region is not welcome. It is a source of anxiety and tension. But what is the alternative? This question must be posed to all active forces in the region. These forces must conduct rounds of dialogue and understanding amongst themselves to prevent foreigners from interfering. There is a proverb that says, "The people of Mecca know best about its paths." The people of the Arab and Islamic region know best how to resolve their conflicts, which is contingent on direct understandings and the diffusal of any tension in the region. For example, we in Libya, despite all the religious, social, political, and cultural rapprochement with our neighbors in the ocean, have some disagreements, let alone countries that are somewhat different in many aspects. Therefore, this matter must be taken into account and understood. Disputes are resolved with understanding, not by postponing them.
Mr. Ambassador, let's move on to the situation inside Libya. Now, many in Africa love Libya and hope to see a lasting peace and stability in this country. Now, what is the state of politics in terms of creating conditions for holding national elections and forming an inclusive government which will bring together all Libyans?
Libyan history testifies that Libya was a place of friendship with the African and Arab surroundings. It was looking for calm in Africa because it is a continent rich in human and material resources. As for the political conditions in the country, right now, the various Libyan parties, and I will not describe them as conflicting ones since the conflict is over, thank God, now there are only differences of opinion. Thus, the differences between the two sides began to be resolved, and the groundwork for holding elections is beginning to take shape, but the realization of this depends on the seriousness of the Libyan political parties.
An interview with the Libyan ambassador to Iran.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Mr. Ambassador, there's been talk about uniting the rival factions in Tobruk and Tripoli. Can we expect good news in the near future regarding this?
Yes, we will see positive news in this subject in the near future. The ice of differences between the two sides began to melt, especially after the Derna disaster and how the Libyan people and politicians in the country came to help. They forgot their differences and past pains.
Okay, thank you for that, Mr. Ambassador. Now, let's move on to the issue of Palestine, which we know right now is the number one issue in the world. In Libya, we have seen, has voiced support to the measures taken by the International Court of Justice to prevent genocide in Gaza Strip through the case presented by South Africa. Now, can you tell us what your country is doing to ensure that the Israeli regime complies with this ruling by the ICJ?
Our country and most Arab, Islamic and even international countries do not have authority over the Israeli occupation to prevent it from committing crimes and make it comply with international rulings. This entity has been evading United Nations resolutions since the year 1948, but our country can use its relations with foreign countries to push them to taking measures and steps against the occupying entity to comply with the decisions of the International Court and stop its crimes.
Thank you for that. Now, Mr. Ambassador, Libya's High State Council has called for cutting ties with those backing the Israeli regime in its war on Gaza. Now, and it's, the Council has also called for halting of oil exports to countries supporting